Okay, this is our final hour here with Michael Cremo, and we'll take your phone calls with him as we talk about ancient archaeology, past civilizations, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Cremo with us. Michael, so when they discover this 2.8 million year old jawbone, why'd they get so excited about it?
Well, yeah, for them, it's putting the origin of what they call the Homo genus, the genus that we belong to, back about 400,000 years before they think it existed. Now, they think what existed around that time before that was Australopithecus. They don't think there was any type of representatives of the genus Homo. But their perception of Homo is of something still very ape-like, still rather small.
Mm-hmm. Chimpanzee-like, too?
Something like that. They would say, you know, something a little bit more human-like than that, but not very much, really. So my position is, yes, there were apes and monkeys at that time. There were creatures sort of intermediate physiologically between humans, anatomically modern humans and apes and monkeys, but there were also humans like us existing at the same time. So I was giving an example a little bit earlier in the show of a jaw that was discovered in Argentina at a place called Miramar. Yeah. In the 1920s, that is totally human and is about 3 million years old. So from that same time period, we've got creatures that are like apes and monkeys, creatures that are like a little bit intermediate between humans and apes, and then you've got evidence that humans like us were also existing at that time. So if you look at all the evidence, the picture that emerges is one of coexistence, not of evolution from monkey to ape man to human, but coexistence of apes, ape men, and humans. And I think the same situation may be there today. There are apes and monkeys on this planet. There are human beings on this planet. There may be creatures like ape men on this planet. You know, there's that takes you into the whole field of research into Sasquatch, the Himalayan snowman, the Yeti, the Almas, and creatures like that.
Okay, Michael, let's go to final calls here for you now. We go to Brooklyn, New York. Marie's been waiting and now on the air. Go ahead, Marie.
Good evening, gentlemen. I was wondering if Mr. Cremo had ever come across the book Mysteries from Forgotten Worlds by Charles Berlitz of the Languages School.
Yes,
of Languages.
Yes, sure site. Was.
He describes an artifact, 14-karat gold replica of a modern jet plane, down to every detail, including the windows, I think. Unfortunately, my book was borrowed by someone 30, 40 years ago.
Can't find it again, huh?
Yes, I'm familiar, Marie, I'm familiar with that discovery. That is something from South America. There are these gold brooch-like figures that look like, they look like the space shuttle. Yeah, that the United States used to fly.
Right.
They took them out of service recently, but it looks exactly like that. So pictures of this sort can also be found in the publications of Eric von Daniken. They appear to be some type of these people in ancient South America, and here we're not talking about millions of years ago, but a couple thousand years ago, they apparently had knowledge and experience of craft that resemble modern spacecraft. The space shuttle, although it has wings, was considered to be a spacecraft. It could go into outer space and then could enter the atmosphere, kind of like an airplane, and glide down to landing strips either in California or Florida. So apparently these people thousands of years ago in South America had experience of those kinds of things. So it's, and they were made of gold, yes.
They were absolutely incredible the way they formed. I mean, clearly they were flying planes, clearly.
Yeah, and not propeller planes, but some kind of craft that was capable of flying by its own engines. And as I said, what it most resembles is a space shuttle.
It sure does. It looks just like it. It's got the same body. What if the originator was a remote viewer and looked into the future? Is that possible?
I think so. You know, it's interesting. One of the mystic powers that's mentioned in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India is Trikalagya, which means knower of the three phases of time. So there were apparently people who had the ability to see into the past, see all of what's going on in the present, and see what it would happen in the future. So, yes, I think that is possible. There are personalities who are able to access by remote viewing and similar capabilities.
Okay.
That are happening beyond the normal limits of human perception.
There you go, Marie. Let's go next to Plymouth, Pennsylvania. John's with us on Coast to Coast. John, you're up with us. Go ahead. I think you are. Nope. The sounds of silence. Let's go next to Don in Albany, Oregon. Hey, Don, let's give you a try.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure thing.
Never listened to a show like this before. This is absolutely fascinating stuff. I'm enamored with this. I'm glad I caught the show. I'll be a longtime listener.
Thank you.
I wonder if you, Mike, if you believe that humans as we know it, or humans like us, as you say, I love that term, originated on this planet, or maybe we were dropped off for some purpose, and if we were, what was that purpose?
Well, the first thing to keep in mind, Don, as far as I'm concerned, is that any type of body, human body, plant body, animal body, is a vehicle for a conscious self. The conscious self is different than the body, just like the driver is different from a car, or a pilot is different from an airplane. We are different from our bodies. So as conscious selves, we're originally from some higher level of reality. We've been dropped here to give us a chance to go back to that original state. And the human vehicle is the best vehicle for doing that, if we use it for its proper purpose. But, you know, sometimes conscious selves, they misuse the vehicle they've been given. Although the vehicle is capable of taking them back to that original position of pure consciousness, sometimes people misuse the vehicle for selfish, extremely materialistic purposes and get into fighting with each other for the control of material resources. So in that case, you might lose your vehicle. Say, like, to operate a car, you need a license. If you use the car in the wrong way so that you become a danger to yourself and others, you may lose your driver's license, which means you don't get to drive a car anymore. So if conscious selves misuse the human vehicle, then in their next lives, they might not get a human vehicle. They might get an animal or a plant vehicle instead. So the reason we've been dropped here is because we've become a little bit selfish. We've become a little bit egotistical. but we've been dropped on this level of reality and given different kinds of vehicles in which to function. If we've been dropped into the human vehicle, that means we've got a chance to go back to our real position beyond the world of birth and death, back to the eternal state of consciousness, which is our natural state of consciousness. So I don't know if that's clearing things up for you or not, but that's the best answer I can give you.
Michael, the flood of Noah, you know, it's in Genesis. Is there any other area out there that you researched that talked about a great flood?
Actually, many of the world's great spiritual traditions talk about floods. And not just one flood, but floods that take place repeatedly over time. And we're not talking here about ordinary floods. We're talking about kind of cosmic floods on a cosmic scale that wipe out life on Earth, and so that the Earth has to be repopulated and human civilization has to begin again, as it did in the biblical account of the flood. But the ancient Sanskrit writings of India speak of repeated catastrophes that take place over the course of hundreds of millions of years, so that there hasn't only been one cosmic flood devastation, but several. And actually, surprisingly enough, there's some evidence for this in modern paleontology and geology. According to modern science, life began on Earth a couple of billion years ago. And since then, according to science, there have been six major extinction events spaced at intervals of several hundred million years. And these extinction events wiped out most of the species on Earth, after which the Earth had to be repopulated. So whether we're looking at the ancient wisdom traditions or we're looking at modern paleontology and geology, there have been repeated catastrophes that have wiped out life on Earth several times, six times according to modern science, and even according to the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, during the most recent creation cycle, which lasts a couple of billion years, there have been six devastations that have taken place.
Let's go to Norwalk, California. Andy's with us now. Andy, go for it.
Hey, great show, George.
Thank you.
Yeah, first of all, Michael, I have a great admiration for you for being the person who, a rare individual who lays it all on the line and takes on the establishment by exposing the rest of the story, which for some reason they are afraid to give us the rest of the truth, which you are exposing. Before I ask my question real quickly, several years ago, a friend of mine, a Latino friend of mine, told me about his buddy who did some exploration in the desert of Southern California and found an underground bunker, went inside, and in that bunker, he found artifacts, including star maps. And it was a very short time after, I guess he talked to some friends and was trying to find a buyer, and a gentleman from the government in suits came to confiscate those items from him. And if you want more information on that, I can get that for you. But here's my question. What's your take on the miniature people that were found and the relics from that era in an island in Indonesia, number one? And number two, was there any evidence of them mingling with the other people that existed in that region of Indonesia? And I wish you the best, and I hope you continue on with your research. You're doing a fantastic job.
Okay. I think the case you're talking about from Indonesia is what is known as the case of Hobbit. scientists on Flores Island in Indonesia, archaeologists from Australia and Indonesia, excavated the bones of a small creature about 3.5 feet tall, but they called it a new species. They thought it was different than anatomically modern humans.
This was on the island of Flores.
Right.
Right?
Okay. That's absolutely right. They called it technically Homo floresiensis, but, you know, that's a bit unwieldy. So part of the marketing that they do is they give their specimens a popular name, like the Hobbit. You know, if you just heard on the news or read on some website, scientists discover bones of Homo floresiensis, it might not mean anything to you. But if they say scientists discover, quote, Hobbit, yeah, everybody's seen that movie, and, you know, you think, wow, fantastic. But some scientists believe that it was just some kind of diseased or deformed human like us. Others believe it was a new human species that they called Homo floresiensis. And my take on it, again, is these creatures are not beyond the accepted range of our modern human species. They're about 18,000 years old or so. Hmm. So it kind of fits within the modern human range, if you want to say it was a diseased human. I tend to think maybe they discovered some Indonesian equivalent of Sasquatch or something. And there were reports from Indonesia back in the early 20th century and late 19th century of living ape men existing in the jungles of Indonesia.
And again, though, these were 3 feet tall, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are small.
And they all grew to that size, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Maybe some were even smaller.
So I think basically what they found was evidence for some type of Sasquatch-type-like creature.
A miniature version.
A miniature version.
All right, Michael, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll take final phone calls with you. So those of you on hold, don't lose your place in line, but we will be right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. Off on one of my missions tomorrow, so Richard Serrett will fill in for me, and I'll be back on Monday. So make sure you're listening to Coast all week long. Welcome back with Michael Cremo. Michael, before we go to final calls, could you remember that story you told me a long time ago about those metallic-looking spherous balls that were found deep, deep underground?
Yeah, those were found in South Africa at a mine near a place called Ottosdalen in the western Transvaal region. They were pretty interesting objects. They were, I called them metallic because when they were analyzed, they turned out to be made of hematite, which is a naturally occurring type of iron. And it's also considered to be a semi-precious jewel. So the interesting feature of these spherical objects that came from this mine in South Africa were the parallel grooves that went around the center of each one. Some of them had two, some had one, some had three, some had four. They're very interesting. And, you know, they were shown on a documentary called The Mysterious Origins of Man that aired on NBC. And before NBC would agree to have them in the documentary, they said you had to submit them to an independent company of metallurgists to examine them. And that was done. The producer of the documentary, Bill Cote, through an archaeologist he knew named Neil Steed, submitted them to an independent company of metallurgists, and they were asked to say how they thought they formed. And they said they could not tell exactly how they formed, especially the parallel grooves that go around the center of each one. Now, some people are going to say, well, it must have happened naturally somehow, but this company of metallurgists said they couldn't tell how they were made, which leaves open the possibility that they had to have been made by someone with human-like intelligence. Now, these things were found in layers of mineral deposits about 2.8 billion, not million, but billion years old. Yeah. So they're enigmatic objects. They're really fascinating. I think unless somebody can give a 100% completely convincing explanation of how exactly how they could have formed naturally, we have to be open to the possibility that they were made by someone with human-like intelligence about almost 3 billion years ago.
That's amazing.
It is. It is really amazing.
Let's go now to Ron in Fayetteville, North Carolina on the Wild Card line. Hello, Ron. Go ahead.
Hello, George. How you doing?
I'm fine, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, I always love your show, man, because you got the greatest topics at all that I love.
There's something else, I'll tell you.
Yes, sir. My question is to your guest is that, you know, he was talking earlier about, you know, about the apes supposed to be in the, you know, that human was deformed from, that came from apes to man. You know, that's what I've always was taught from during the time when I was in school through the science book and everything else. But my second question is that, now, you know, we always talked about that Adam and Eve was the first people that was supposed to have been on the earth.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So now, you know, whenever he was talking about that there was some kind of humanoid or human people on the earth. So apparently by Adam and Eve being on, you know, supposed to be the first two people on the earth that was supposed to, I guess, to see the earth, you know, for mankind or whatever, you know.
Well, Michael, let's start.
Well, I, you know, I agree with what Ron is saying, that at some point there were some first humans on Earth. There was some first humans. And this is what most of the world's great wisdom traditions tell us, whether we're talking about the Bible or the Quran or the ancient Indian text or any of these great world spiritual traditions. They say there were some first humans here who were placed here by some higher intelligence in the cosmos, by God, in other words. So I accept that. I don't accept the idea that the first living thing on this planet somehow came into existence on its own, you know, just by chemicals interacting and combining together somehow and producing some first single cell creature. And I don't believe that just all by themselves these single cell creatures started clumping together and forming multicellular creatures, some of which eventually became apes and monkeys, which eventually became ape men, which finally became humans less than 200,000 years ago. So I agree in principle with what Ron said, that in the beginning of the history of life on Earth, human beings were here and they were put here by some higher source in the cosmos. I accept that.
All very possible. Thanks for the call, Ron. Let's go to Matt in Minnesota now. Matt, it's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Hi.
How are
you doing, George?
Okay.
Yeah, I do believe in evolution. I believe that, you know, we became aware somehow, you know, along the line. And I believe, like, if you look at, like, the story of Adam and Eve, you know, or any, a lot of stories from different religions, they'll say, you know, like, in Adam and Eve, will say they bit the apple, you know, and they became self-aware, like, they knew good and evil, right?
Yeah.
Well, what if that's actually just the story? What if that's just, like, what people put together, like, where, like, we believe, like, that happened, and then, like, that didn't actually happen, but, like, people made a story up, and that's, like, when humans became self-aware, like, we weren't apes anymore, and then became, you know, more self-aware, and then were able to do other things, you know, because we have a higher consciousness now.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think, Michael?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I respect the right of each individual to make sense of these things in whatever way that makes most sense to that individual. I would just have to say that I personally would disagree with that particular idea for the following reasons. First of all, there's archaeological evidence that contradicts it. There, according to the theory of evolution, humans like us first came into existence less than 200,000 years ago. And what I've seen is there's a lot of archaeological evidence suggesting that humans like us existed hundreds of millions of years ago, even going back to the very beginnings of the history of life on Earth. So that's one reason I would say I think that humans have been around since the beginning and were placed here fully formed. And there is the evidence from all these different ancient wisdom traditions, which, yeah, the caller says may just be the way that people thought, and it's not really the fact, but I tend to take it as factual because I think there's archaeological evidence that supports it. So I think people can have different opinions about these things, and I don't mind that there's differences of opinion or differences of conviction about what is factually true. The only thing that I would object to is if somebody tries to say, use government to say that in the education system, only one idea should be taught and enforce it on everybody, no matter what their personal conviction is. That I wouldn't agree with. As I said, I respect the right of each individual to have their own convictions or opinions about these things.
Michael, with the Vermanas, how come we haven't found one? Or do you think somebody does have one?
Well, those are pretty interesting questions. I think somebody does have one, whether it's in a place where we can all see it, that's another question. These things are observed. There are observations of UFOs even today by people who may be in the military, who may be commercial airline pilots, who are good observers. Yeah, there's quite a bit of evidence for the existence of these things. And they are described in the text of different ancient wisdom traditions. The Vedic writings of India have elaborate descriptions of these Vimanas. And some of the modern observations of the flight patterns of the manas match the descriptions of the flight patterns of them found in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India. For example, there's a description of a mana in the Bhagavat Purana, mm-hmm. or Srimad Bhagavatam. It's called the airplane of Shalva, and it's described that it would appear many places at the same time. It would appear, and this is something that we do in modern warfare. You know, we have the ability to create false images of a missile warhead or an aircraft in order to fool the defense forces of an opposing nation. You know, so we can do that. We can make an airplane appear to be in, or a missile warhead appear to be in many different places at once. So apparently they had that ability in ancient times. So what's really convincing to me is that descriptions given in writings thousands of years old correspond to modern observations of the behavior of aircraft and UFOs and spacecraft and things of that sort.
What a story that would be, Michael, if they ever unveiled one of those things, huh?
Well, I think it would be pretty amazing.
Next up, Sam in Waco, Texas. Go for it, Sam.
I was thinking all this stuff they find, pictures of helicopters, UFOs. What if it's really time traveler? Time traveler with a good sense of humor.
Well, you know what? That was a possibility. That's something you really can't rule out, but I don't think so. I think they were witnesses to that kind of technology, and they left things behind for us. That's what I think, Michael.
Yeah, that's my opinion, too. I don't think, I mean, like I said, I respect the right of each individual to have their own opinion about these things. But as far as I can see, backward time travel is not really possible. And leaping forward into the future, I think that is possible. It is possible that maybe somebody in the past was able to envision things and build those technologies, but I think the people that built them were people existing at that time, and what they built existed at that time. I'm pretty much of the same opinion as you, George, on this topic.
Yeah, me too. Michael, a couple more questions here, and we're almost done. Will is in New York. Hey, Will, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Will.
Let me ask you a question. See your opinion. You know, don't you think the building blocks for human beings were all over the universe, but only in certain conditions can they flurry?
Yes, for instance, absolutely.
If there was less gravity here, we would be floating bags of fat.
Mm-hmm. I have always said that the primordial soup is the same throughout the universe. It's everywhere. They're now beginning to say that Ganymede, one of Jupiter's moons, the largest one, full of ice, 95 miles thick, that it has salt water. I mean, Michael, the soup, the primordial soup, it's the same, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's like saying, you know, the ingredients for houses can be found everywhere. You can find nails, you can find boards, you can find bricks, but still it takes an intelligence to build the house. The bricks and the mortar and the drywall and everything isn't going to come together itself. So although the ingredients for the bodies of living things may be found all over the universe, I think it still requires a higher intelligence to put it all together to form even the most simple living thing. Even the simplest single-celled creature is extremely complex. So although the chemical units, subunits for a living thing, the bodies of living things may be found all over the universe, it still requires intelligence to put them together to form the body for a living thing.
Let's go out to Ole in Hawaii and try to get a question here. Hi, Ole. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll try to make it quick.
Sure.
I wanted to ask Michael about DNA, mitochondrial DNA passed through the line of the woman. And
I think I know where you're going on this, that it can be traced back to a single African Eve or something like that.
You think it can, Michael?
No, not really, because the lines of mitochondrial DNA, that, you know, there may be some mothers who never had children in the past. You know, scientists, they look at the current diversity of mitochondrial DNA in living humans, and they try to back calculate where it all coalesced together. There are a couple things wrong with this process. First, they're assuming what they're trying to prove, namely that it can all be traced back to a common ancestor, which I don't think is necessarily true. And in any case, the current diversity among mitochondrial DNA in human populations today doesn't represent the totality of diversity, because there may have been mothers who didn't have children, and therefore DNA doesn't come down to be observed today. So if you factored in all of that, then I think you don't get the conclusion that many have tried to reach today.
Michael Cremo, I'll see you in a few weeks at the Survival of Humanity here in Los Angeles. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.